Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you, and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
Everyone, welcome to From the Kitchen Table. I'm Sean Duffy, along with my co-host for the podcast, my partner in life, and my wife, Rachel Campos Duffy. Hey, Rachel.
Sean, it's great to be back. It's a big day for us today.
It is a big day for us. So on this podcast, we are going to talk about Donald Trump's latest statement on abortion and actually how conservatives should be talking about the issue. But before we do that, this is a very special day for the Kitchen Table and for the Duffys, because today is our 25th wedding anniversary. We've been together.
We've been together more than 25 years. We've been married 25 years.
But what's interesting is it doesn't seem like 25 years. We were talking about some of the great times of the last 25 years and all the fun kind of things we've done, the hard things we've gone through and the fun things we've done. And I'm like, it doesn't seem like it's been 25 years that we've been together. Time just kind of flies.
Yeah, I mean, we've been kind of, for the last few days leading up to today, talking about, it's been a quarter century, and we've been reminiscing, we've been talking about things that have happened and different sort of critical junctures in our relationship and our marriage and where things, you know, wound up and how we didn't expect to end up here or there, or how this happened, how that happened. But the one conclusion we had is we can't believe it's been 25 years. And I think that's actually a good sign.
I think it's a good sign too. And I think, I mean, it's interesting. We talk about a lot of issues on our podcast, and we kind of came back to this point that was early in our marriage, when I was the DA, and it was kind of a glorious, wonderful time in our marriage where I came home for lunch. We had little kids.
You would take the kids to school.
Then you
work down the street. So then you would just come home and I would have lunch ready for you. I was an at-home mom for 14 years before I ended up starting to work part-time. And then
I'd pick them up after school, bring them home, and then go back to the DA's office. It was a really wonderful time. And during those years,
it was like family building time. It was a great formation, great foundation for us.
It was good for us
as a marriage, and good for us as I think as parents, to kind of, that was sort of like our North Star, if you will. Like,
and we did that moved to a conservative place. We were like in one of the most liberal places in Wisconsin, and we had a lot of time for our family, and it was a really beautiful, wonderful time. We talked about some neat little trips we did together, the two of us, and some that we did with little kids that seemed raucous and wild, but some of the fondest memories of these little trips that we'd go on, road trips we'd take as a family. So I just need to say, you never know what you're going to get in marriage. I think, Forrest Gump would say, it's like a box of chocolates. Mm-hmm. And it's been really wonderful to have 25 years with you being married, and sharing this journey of life and family and careers, and coffee has been really great. I've been blessed wonderfully by the good Lord to have helped me pick.
Well, you know, usually when people get married, the woman's a little bit unsure. In our marriage, Sean was a little unsure. And so we always joke and laugh he's really glad that I forced him to marry him.
I didn't know we were going to go there, but that's true.
This morning, by the way, 25 is a big year. It's a quarter century. It's a big number. You know, it's not like 17 or 22. It's like 25. It's like a big year. And so I had to think, what will I do for Sean Duffy? And when we got married, I surprised Sean during the wedding. I had all these Irish Duffy family, huge, massive family. Sean has 10 brothers and sisters, and the Duffys descended on Arizona. And I knew we were going to have mariachis because we're Mexican American. So we were going to have mariachis at the wedding reception. I thought, what could we do? Me and my mom were like, what could we do for the Duffys to feel welcome? And my mom came up with the idea of, we should have bagpipe players. And so we kept the secret, just me and my mom. And at the end of the wedding ceremony,
I had no idea.
He had no idea. They said, kiss the bride. And we kissed. And all of a sudden, we hear the bagpipes go off. And the bagpipe player walked up the side of the aisle. And all the Duffys were like, what's going on? And it then was... the bagpipe player led us down the aisle. You know, it went the bagpipe player, then us, then the priest, or I don't know which way it went. But the bagpipe player was the first. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to bring back that moment. And I had remembered, I know you're not a big fan of all our royal conversations, but if you had watched The Crown, Sean.
Which I have not.
You would know.
I still have my man card, everybody.
I know. The Crown is so good. But if you had watched The Crown.
I actually watched like 5 episodes once because you were watching. I'm like, actually, it was pretty good.
You started getting into it a little bit. Then you were like, this is affecting my manlihood.
It is.
And you checked out. But if you had kept watching, you would know that when Queen Elizabeth goes to Balmoral Castle, which is her favorite place to go, and it's the castle that she has in Scotland, it's where she feels the most. She is very sentimental about Balmoral. When she goes to Balmoral, she is awakened every morning by bagpipes. She has a royal bagpipe player. And so I decided that you're the king of this house, Sean. And
you're
the king of this. Even I can't say that without laughing. Okay. You are the king of this house. You're the king of my heart, too. And so I decided
Queen Elizabeth's husband was...
He was
Trustman.
Why can't I remember?
But he was nothing, right? Was he like, he
was... No, he was royal family.
But he was king.
He's blue blood.
I'm kind of like, I live with the queen is what it is.
This was for the king. This was for the king.
Okay.
And so I hired a bagpipe player and I got all the kids in on the secret.
So hold on a
second. Sean was sleeping. Go ahead. Okay,
So last night... I
decided you should wake up like the queen to bagpipes on your wedding anniversary.
The night before, I woke up at 1:30 in the morning. I couldn't go back to sleep. I had to go to work early. I did outnumbered, and I couldn't. Like, I was exhausted. So I came home last night, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go. I'll let you go to bed early. And you're like, yes, you go to bed, you sleep in. That's my gift to you. And I'm like,
because usually we get up at around 6:15 because we have to get the kids ready for school.
Yeah.
And I said, go ahead, you can sleep in.
You sleep in. That's my gift.
Well, that's my anniversary gift to you. You sleep in, I'll take the kids.
That's how unassuming I am. Yeah. So,
first he came home and he said, he scared the heck out of me because I hired the bagpipe player to come at 6:30 in the morning. So I was going to let him sleep in a little bit. And I hired the bagpipe at 6:30. And then he came home and he's like, oh, they called me from Fox and Friends. They want me to do the tomorrow morning at around 6:30. And I was like, oh no, this whole thing is going to be ruined. And he said, but then we started talking.
And they want me to come to the studio. I'm like, I can't leave my house.
And he said, no, it's my anniversary.
Yeah.
And so we rescheduled for another day. And I said, oh, thank God. So anyway.
So
you go to bed.
I go to bed while you woke me up. So that I didn't sleep that well last night either. So that I fall back asleep and I'm like fried. I'm like, Rachel's off getting the kids to school. And I know this in the back of my sleepy mind. And
I got up early because I made a special little breakfast for everybody so that when it was done, that we would. So I got up nice and early. And then the kids were up early because they knew they were going to help me with filming it. Can we just show a little if you're listening, you can at least hear it.
We're going to show you the video of while okay. I'm sleeping for this, by the okay. way. And Rachel thought that I would actually wake up to it.
There's a bagpipe player under his window, and I opened the window, and he's playing so loud. And Sean, he doesn't wake up to anything.
Rachel had to hit me to
wake
me up.
Finally, I had to go, get up!
And so here is Rachel... and the bagpipe player she brought in for our wedding anniversary this morning. I'm sorry. It makes me laugh. It makes me smile. It was so wonderful.
Well, usually bagpipes make you cry, Sean.
And well, so I came to the window like Rapunzel, I guess. And I couldn't see the bagpipe player. I heard the bagpipe,
the
but
tree
it was hidden behind
full,
a tree,
the,
right?
The we have this tree that's now in full bloom. So he couldn't see the bagpipe player behind all the flowers.
Is he playing a recording of a bagpipe? What's going on?
No.
And then it's like, oh, okay, there's an actual bagpipe player there, which was wonderful.
So Sean was in his underwear, so he had to go get his jeans on.
Put a shirt on. And then I came downstairs, and the bagpipe player came in the house. We took a picture with him. He played more inside the house.
Yeah, he was a nice guy.
That was a wonderful surprise and really thoughtful.
You would have never guessed I was going to do that, would you have?
Not only did I never guess that you would have done it at our wedding, never would have I guessed that you would have repeated it today. 25 years later, she still surprises me, which is kind of the magic.
So I was so worried because I only told one child like 2 days ago. And I said, I'm going to tell you a secret because I do need you to get up early on that day.
It's a good lesson with kids.
Yeah. She immediately told her brother, and then that brother was talking about it, and another one over her. Anyway, the secret was out.
Right.
And so the only one who didn't know was the littlest one. And so last night before you got home, I said, okay, here's the deal. This is what's happening. And then I said, now when dad comes home, everyone act normal. And then the little one goes, well, if we don't talk, he's going to know it's not normal. So it was so funny.
They did wrong. I didn't know
anything
was going on.
And we even had a contingency plan in case you came down and you kind of woke up before the bagpipe player started playing.
No, I'll get up early. You should get up with the kids. I'll get up too.
And I said, oh, no, you just sleep in. Anyway, we did it. And I thought it was really fun. And the kids were in on it. And we let them go to school a little late.
They
could enjoy it. And we had a nice little breakfast with them after. And anyway,
so
happy anniversary, honey.
Happy anniversary. And just for everyone listening, you're like, well, what did you do for Rachel for her anniversary? She doesn't have her gift yet. It's not going to come on our anniversary. It's going to take a little extra time, but it's taken some time to percolate and figure out what this
we'll
is.
We'll have to announce that when that happens.
Is, yes.
But happy anniversary.
She will like it.
The reason I want to talk about this, Sean, I wanted to make sure we talked about our anniversary. Because we're still really excited. We've been sort of, like I said, talking about it for the last few years. It seems like this number just snuck up on us. But, you know, we live in a culture where marriage rates have plummeted. Young women are being told that this, you know, is retro and patriarchal and all this kind of stuff. And in conjunction with sort of those cultural messages, you have social media that is sort of separating the sexes on so many levels, you know, alienating them from one another. So they're just having this like really inauthentic conversations online, and people aren't getting married for a myriad of reasons. And I just wanted to kind of take today to celebrate marriage. You know, we don't talk enough about how great it is. And I know that there's a lot of times it fails. And I have people who are close to me and it has failed for them. And I get it that, you know, it's an imperfect world and sometimes it doesn't work out. But if you find somebody who is your friend, and if you find somebody that you're willing to work through this, and you're willing to take this journey with, it is the most amazing experience. I would not want to be alone, Sean. Every time something happens, good or bad, the earthquake happened the other day, and I said, I wouldn't want to go through an earthquake without anyone other than Sean. Something wonderful happens, I'm like, I'm really glad that I got to share that experience with Sean. Or if I experience something, it feels like it didn't happen until I tell Sean that it happened. And so I really want to lift up marriage and talk about how wonderful it is to go through life with somebody else that you love, that you care about, that you respect, that you are best friends with, because life is tough. And I just feel like we can get through anything together. And I don't want to pay my electric bills by myself, Sean. The worst part of life. I don't want to pay bills by myself.
That's the answer.
I don't want to, go through happy times by myself. I don't want to travel by myself. I don't even want to go to the movies by myself. I want to do it with you.
And I want to do it with you. And I think it's for me, it was, you mentioned, I was like, well, okay, we're going to, you know, get married. And it has been a journey for me, and I can't imagine my life any other way. I can't imagine that I'd be as happy having not married you than had I make other choices. Mm-hmm. and just so grateful. I think the hand of God is in my life that he's led me down this path. You always mentioned too, like every marriage is a mystery, right? Mm-hmm. And how they function, how they work, is this unique entity onto the marriage itself. Like, so
don't judge other people's marriages because you just don't know how.
So, like for us, we got kids, and I work. I don't get home till after 8 o'clock at night. So, our plan was on Saturday, Sunday actually. I had to go to the grocery store, and we're going to do hamburgers on Sunday. And so she's like, "Hey,
Sean makes excellent smash burgers. I'm just saying, they're better than Five Guys.
They're killer.
They're amazing."
But I went and got a steak that she likes and a steak that I like. And so tonight we're gonna
My man a steak dinner. And we're gonna do it. We're not gonna go to restaurants. It just doesn't make any sense.
But for us, that works for us. Like that's great. And hopefully, I think we're going to go on Friday. We'll go up dinner when you're in the city for.
Yeah, I'm hosting Laura Ingram on Friday.
So anyway, I do. It's important to celebrate marriage, and again, the beauty of it and the happiness that comes from it, and building a family, building mm-hmm. a legacy, and building a life with someone else, sharing your life with someone else. Brings far more joy than that of singlehood and self-absorption. So that's my take on marriage.
It's a wonderful take. You know, one of the things that I noticed this morning, Sean, and it was really interesting. You know, the kids were in on the secret, and I think they were, you know, kids.
By the way, Rachel was going to let me go to the window, which I did go to the window, only in my underwear. And there was a bagpipe. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, I'm sitting on the window in my underwear looking out.
Oh,
and
finally,
I was
okay.
Like, I better put some pants on.
Kevin, the bagpipe players, has seen people in their underwear before. But anyway, Maybe. You know, I was in the kids were in on the secret, and that was exciting for them. But I also think that they really loved seeing, like, this moment. Do you know what I mean? That they were part of the moment, because this is their legacy too. And they get to see, you know, two people, you know, by the way, we fight, we make up, our kids have seen us fight, our kids have seen us make up. We've been married a long time. We know each other well, we know each other's moods. We get into moods. I mean, this is an up and down thing. Our kids have witnessed it, but I think our kids have also seen us, you know, they've seen a moment like this. And I think it was interesting. I think they were basking in it too, in their own way. Maybe the littlest ones aren't able to absorb it, but I think the older ones are understanding what this means. And in some ways taking this in, and hopefully it's building that legacy that you talk about, that we're having as a family, that it will let them know that it is possible to get married, to find happiness, to be happy, and to have it last. That is the greatest gift I think we're giving our kids is faith and trust in marriage as a sacrament.
It could have been they just wanted to have a little party and go to school.
And they did go to school late. They did like that
and
party.
It felt like a little party.
But I can see it. They were loving it.
Yeah, they did. And so I think...
when we kiss and they go, oh, that's gross. But I think secretly they kind of like that their parents like each other.
Well, I think when they were going off to school, didn't one of them say... This is for you, and basically, why are we celebrating this? Like, why are they part of it? Did one of them say that?
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, but I thought you were like, this is, well, if we were married.
Oh, yeah, that's right. One of them did say that.
If we didn't celebrate this anniversary, you wouldn't be here. So,
right.
Yes, this is about you as well. This marriage actually brought you into the world. So,
but it's more than that. It's that these 25 years are a testament to them that they can do it for 25 years.
Right.
That it is possible, even in this culture that has a 50% marriage divorce rate, I should say, that it is possible to have a long, loving, wonderful marriage.
We have we've almost known each other longer than... We haven't known each other.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great.
We're almost there.
So, listen, happy anniversary.
Thank you, honey.
Thanks for the big pipes. Those
were
awesome. So thoughtful.
Wait right there. We'll have more of this conversation next.
Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God, worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
Okay, so this week was also a big week for Donald Trump. So he's locked up the nomination. It should have been locked up earlier than it was. But now the donors, even those who hate Donald Trump, have resigned themselves to the fact that the nominee is Donald Trump, that the base loves Donald Trump, that nobody believes that even if those who don't love Donald Trump know he's the only one that can take on this Democrat machine. We used to talk about the Obama-Clinton machine, Sean, as like this political powerhouse. But now we know that the Democrats also use, agencies that were used to capture terrorists in our government. They use these agencies, they use the legal system, they use the FBI, they use the CIA against their enemies. And that with these kinds of evil forces up against any Republican candidate, that Donald Trump seems to be the only one that has the strength to stand up to it.
Can I just make one point on this too, though? So Joe Biden was in New York 2 weeks ago, and he had two very popular former presidents with him, Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. And it was like they shut down New York.
Lizzo, and he had Stephen Colbert, he had celebrities galore.
Celebrity galore, and raised $25 million. And by the way, we were like, that is a crap load of money, $25 million. Donald Trump, with no celebrities other than Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's the only celebrity in the Republican
Party. Not in New York, but down in Florida, raised $50 million. So to your point, he's had an interesting but really good week. And people who are like, I can't support Trump. I'm not going to give to Trump. I'm waiting for Ron DeSantis or Nikki Haley, but anybody but Trump. Now they realize it's actually Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And they've been confronted with this reality, and now they're opening up their checkbooks and they're giving it to Trump because they can't stand the thought. They might not love Trump, but they can't stand the thought of four more years of Joe Biden.
That's right. And so one of the biggest hurdles for Donald, because everything else that he has been campaigning on and talking about, whether it's the border, inflation, China, our military, you name the issue, Donald Trump has been prescient and correct on. The one thing that the Democrats, basically the only quiver in the Democrats, what do you call it? The bag that you put your quivers in for your arrows? I don't know the name of that because I'm not, if we knew a bow hunter, we'd be able to ask him. But in any case, the last quiver they have, the only quiver they have is abortion.
Well, isn't it? It's an arrow in your quiver, so that is your quiver.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The only arrow in their quiver. Thank you, honey. This is why I married you. This is the kind of
insight. See, I have a man card. I was like, what is she talking about?
He has a man card, and he just pulled it, and he just used it, and he just corrected me. So I want you to look, and it's abortion. And the reason is because as much as you and I would love for America to be pro-life, and as much as pro-lifers have worked in the field to try and change people's views on abortion, the culture is powerful, and Americans, while they want some restrictions, are still not ready to restrict abortion. Now, what Donald Trump did that was so remarkable was he was elected. He made a promise to the pro-lifers that they weren't sure he could keep. And he said, I promise you, if you elect me, I will reverse Roe versus Wade. And
I'm going to put pro-life justices on the court.
He got
three justices on the court.
Which is a remarkable hand of luck. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Stroke of luck. He got a remarkable stroke of luck, which made the Democrats want to literally tear their teeth and their hair out. He got three justices. He took the advice of, what's the group that recommend your Leo?
Leonard Leo,
and they think they're called the Federalist Society. They recommended different justices. He put those justices on, and those justices were critical and pivotal in the overturning of Roe versus Wade 2 summers ago in June. And so now Roe versus Wade has been overturned, and the pro-life dream has happened, and that is that this decision has now been turned back to the states. However, the Democrats have been very effective in saying, you know, this is going to be a return to, you know, hangers and women dying and all those scare tactics that they have. And they have been effective in ginning up concern about abortion. And Donald Trump has decided that he is going to be practical about the issue of abortion and not let basically thwart the Democrats so they can't run on this issue. And he put out a statement that people have been awaiting, have been anticipating, and it came out this week. And here is a portion of what he said.
Roe v. Wade. They wanted it ended. It must be remembered that the Democrats are the radical ones on this position because they support abortion up to and even beyond the 9th month. The concept of having an abortion in the later months and even execution after birth, and that's exactly what it is, the baby is born, the baby is executed after birth, is unacceptable, and almost everyone agrees with that.
So his strategy is to say, I'm going to take a restriction on abortion, which is where most people are. They want it legal, but they want it restricted to a certain date. By the way, Sean and I do not agree with this position. This is not our preference for position. We believe that life begins at conception. But Donald Trump has decided to land where most Americans are with some sort of abortion being, first of all, he threw it back to the state. So he's like, I'm out of this. But also saying he was not going to do a federal mandate banning it, which a lot of pro-lifers are opposed to, and saying and focusing instead on how radical the Democrats are, that they are for abortion up to the 9 months, which is what you heard in that clip.
Right. And so if we have some polling that says that'll show us that if
this is a Gallup poll, by the way,
the polling of Americans, 34% of Americans want abortion legal at any point up to the time of birth, but only 51% want it legal under certain circumstances. So they support restrictions to abortion, not where the Democrats are at the late term stage. And 13% of Americans want abortion banned. So
So we're in the 13%, and we have to admit we're only 13% who want it absolutely banned.
And so I'd say I'm a pro-life Catholic. I voted that way. I ran that way. And so it's a unique time. And again, Donald Trump is taking some arrows from some people in the pro-life movement that he's not going to fight for a federal ban of abortion.
Can I tell you who those people
sure.
are? Lila Rose.
We love Lila Rose.
We love Lila Rose. But Lila Rose, by the way, also had supported Ron DeSantis. I don't know how much of that has to do with it. I think she's a pretty straight shooter as far as the life issue. She, of course, believes in, like we do, she's part of that 13% that wants it illegal in all cases. Marjorie Danforth, she's the head of the...
The March?
No, not the March. Sean, the ones who run Susan B. Anthony list. Mm-hmm. And then, oddly, Lindsey Graham, who has taken a position further to the right of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump actually took, and this week has taken, you know, shots and arrows back at Lindsey Graham and told him he's responsible for a lot more death in the wars that he supports, which is a fair point as well.
So let's break this down, though. So as pro-lifers, and again, this is about, if you're not pro-life, this Donald Trump's position is for you as well. Because, again, what pro-lifers wanted was to overturn Roe v. Wade. And if you overturn Roe v. Wade, we knew what was going to happen is it was going to go back to states. And then you have some fairness in that you can actually fight to actually limit or restrict abortions. With Roe v. Wade, it was impossible. The Supreme Court had a law that basically prohibited the American people from voicing their opinion at the ballot box on what they wanted. And so that you get to fight this in the states is a place that pro-lifers can make their case. And then the American people get a vote and they get to decide what they want for abortion in their community. And again, I'm a bit distraught that more Americans aren't in our 13%. But that's the reality.
Yeah,
and Democrats, they did really well in 2020. They did really, really well in 2022 on the issue of abortion, scaring the crap out of people, trying to get women to go, this is my freedom's at stake and I need to vote Democrat to protect my freedom. Well, Donald Trump did, and you might disagree with me, I think he did it really well in 2 points. The first is, not my issue, everybody. I'm not gonna pass a federal ban. This is in the state. So you got an issue with this? Go talk to your governor. Go talk to your legislature. Maybe you want to have a ballot initiative where you're gonna decide what you want for your abortion law in your state. But we're not doing it federally. It's a state issue. And the second thing that Republicans never do, Rachel, is he flips it and talks about how extreme they are.
Smart.
That he wants to, that they want to kill so babies sometimes even after birth, which is true. And if you
don't, and he ended up, Sean, sending out on Truth Social the video of
the former governor of Virginia.
The former governor of Virginia. Let's play that right now.
All right.
The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
That was the former governor of Virginia. And everyone knew this, but he made the mistake of saying the quiet part out loud. He's a doctor, by the way. So he knows exactly, he knows the facts. He knows that this is happening. And so this is Donald Trump doing an excellent job of exposing who are the real radicals on this issue.
So think about a fight between two men. And one man stands there with his hands at his side, and the other man just punches him in the face. Who's going to win that fight? That's like Republicans and Democrats. The Republicans stand there, arms to the side, and the Democrats just punch them in the face nonstop. What Donald Trump has done is said, no, I'm gonna pick my fists up, and I'm going to start punching back.
Yeah.
By talking about how radical they are.
So smart.
And how crazy their position is. And that's the way you either win on the issue or you fight to a draw on the issue. And then you move to other issues.
Because, Sean,
like immigration,
what
like
has
economy,
been happening and the
like
reason
inflation.
Why we lost in those last two elections that
they
you
didn't
laid
fight.
Out. Right. What Republicans wanted to do was say, well, we don't want to talk about abortion. We're going to stick our head in the sand. And we're only going to talk about inflation and the border. Well, guess what? They're going to talk about abortion and they're going to paint you as a radical. And if you don't defend yourself and point it right back at them, that's what should happen. What every single member of Congress who gets asked in a debate by the media, anybody who's running right now, the minute they get asked the abortion question, they should stop the conversation and say, excuse me, sir or ma'am, explain to me what is the age that you what is your limit on abortion? We'll start there. Tell me, you know, show me yours, I'll show you mine. Show me your limit, and then we can talk about what my position is. But every Republican should put every Democrat on their heels. Now,
I want to start off by going, you know what? I'll tell you what my position is not, which is what my opponent's position is.
Thank you.
Which is they support late-term partial birth abortion, and in some cases, they're okay with the baby being born and making a decision on life or death after birth. So I am not there at all. So let's be clear on that. That's where my opponent's at. Let me tell you where I'm at. And
now,
that's how you start.
Now, I'm not going to say that I think his statement was perfect. If Donald Trump had come to me, I would have added a few things to this. Now, first of all, he started the statement out talking about IVF. The consultants, Donald Trump, they've all been very nervous about IVF because that brings up a lot of moral and ethical issues around what to do with the fetuses that have been created. And those have souls as well. And so that is a whole thing. He also said, I don't want to talk about that. I'm just pro baby. So he took that off the table. I have some quibbles with that as well. But also I thought if he was going to take that position, I thought he should have talked about what's at the heart of this, which is why do we have so much infertility to begin with? Sean, we have an infertility
epidemic.
It's a crisis. It's an epidemic. You're right. That's the right word. And it's not just with women. It's with men. We clearly have something going on in our food, in our environment that has caused infertility to plummet.
And I
get it that women are starting later than they should to try and have babies. And we should, by the way, be a lot more honest with women about the truth about their own fertility and how much more fertile they are in their 20s than their 30s and their 40s. that's one end of it. But there is something going on in our food and our environment. And I think Donald Trump missed a real opportunity to go, instead of all of us depending on big pharma and IVF, which, by the way, is very harmful to women's bodies. The hormones that they ingest into women are many people believe are cancer causing. It's definitely not the preferable way to have a baby. And so let's talk about infertility and let's get to the bottom of it and get big pharma out of the way so we can talk honestly in the way that Robert Kennedy Jr. has been talking about the toxins, about the GMOs, about the ultra processed food and all the things that are contributing to infertility. The other thing I think he missed, Sean, was this statement should have come with another statement about the millions of dollars that he would divert from wasteful crap that our government's doing. And our government is wasting money on everything from, you know, shrimp, studying shrimp on treadmills to LGBTQ programs in Palestine and Africa and God knows where, that he was going to take every wasteful, stupid program that our government is wasting and take that money and redirect it to the states to care for unwed mothers. I want every woman in America who finds themselves in that position of being pregnant and feeling hopeless and not knowing what to do, to know that our churches and our governments are ready to help. Because this is an incredible stat, Sean. 80% of all women who are post-abortive, that means these are women who have already had abortions, 80% of them said they show regret and they say, I would not have done this had I had support from my partner or my family. But that should include our government, because we have a responsibility to unwed mothers. And what has happened, Sean, to the homes for mothers? What has happened to the kind of support? And we can get into it later in the show, but there are three states who have modeled this in an incredible way. But this is something the federal government should be involved in. And if Donald Trump is listening, you should be talking about the federal money that you're going to direct to the states to help.
What are the three states are? Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania has been the leader in this. Now, sadly, there's a Democrat governor in Pennsylvania who has removed the funding that was given by Governor Casey. He was one of the last pro-life Democrats in the country. That's a dinosaur that's dying off.
Not his son. Senate.
Son's a horrible.
The dad, who is the governor.
Choicer, yeah. Now you can't really survive, Sean.
Yeah.
I think you actually knew the last pro-life Democrat ever. He was from Illinois, wasn't he?
But there
are no more pro-life Democrats. They're a dead breed. They're dinosaurs. They're gone. So it started in Pennsylvania. There's a program called Real Alternatives run by an amazing guy named Kevin. And he while they've lost some funding because of this Democrat governor, they are basically the model for, they have homes. I mean, remember back in the 50s, there were homes where unwed women could go to and get support if they weren't supported by their boyfriends. Often it's the boyfriends, Sean, who are abandoning women and forcing them to have abortions against their will. So this is a safe place where they can live, have their baby, get on their feet again and figure out their lives without having to kill their children, which they don't want to do. The other state is Indiana and Texas. Indiana, after Roe versus Wade became was overturned, Indiana passed a restriction, I believe a 15-week ban on abortion. At the very same time they passed that ban, a simultaneous companion bill dedicated $74 million to helping pregnant women and especially those who are unwed. So that was an amazing thing. Sean, they don't even pay taxes on diapers anymore in Indiana because of this bill. It's a pro-woman, pro-baby, pro-family way of dealing with it. And so that is a model for the country. That is a model for Donald Trump. I hope that this is not the end of his stance on abortion. I hope he moves forward on something else.
But just the political potency of this issue. So Donald Trump makes a statement. Again, this is a state issue. States can, you know, and we have democracy now. You can have a say in what kind of abortion or life policies you have in your state. And he said Democrats are radical. So it's interesting then, what does Joe Biden say? He's not like, oh, really good. Donald Trump and I agree that voters should have a say in abortion, and it should be a state issue. No. He understood, Joe Biden understood the power of what Donald Trump was saying, and he came out and said, you're a liar. You're lying. You don't really want it in the states. You want a federal ban. And Joe Biden's doing that because he knows, in truth, Donald Trump doesn't want a federal ban. He wants to send it to the states.
He already did it.
But Joe Biden needs to present to the American people the false and fake story that Donald Trump does want a federal ban, because that's the only issue he can run on. He can't run on abortion. I mean, on the border. He can't run on the economy. He can't run on inflation. Can't run on crime. Can't run on foreign policy. There are no issues that Joe Biden can run on. So the only thing he has is abortion. And Donald Trump said it's a non-issue because it's a state issue. And he was like, no, you can't take that issue away from me. I need that issue. That's the only shot I have of, you know, getting a second term in the presidency. So I'm not going to let you take that away from me, Donald Trump. I'm going to lie about your position and say you want the federal ban. Fascinating. So it underscores how potent this issue is for Democrats.
We'll have more of this conversation after this.
And why Republicans and their consultants are such bedwetters. I'm so sick of the consultant class that is running away from this issue. I want to ask you something, Sean. If we can take our emotions out of it, because Sean and I are very pro-life. We believe that, again, that life starts at conception. And every life is worthy and has dignity, and we're horrified by the eugenics culture that we've established. Mm-hmm. That now, you know, 80-90% of all children who are born with Down syndrome or some other mental or physical handicap are exterminated. This is something we should be talking about more. But if we could take the morality and the ethics out of it, and the faith reasons and the science reasons that you and I both share on the abortion issue, and just look at what he did politically, the raw politics of this. Are you saying to me, Sean Duffy, that statement that Donald Trump did this week that he delivered on Truth Social, is that checkmate?
This is the most effective message that he could have. Again, do I think that Donald Trump is pro-abortion or pro-life? Well, what he did in his first term is pretty indicative of where his heart is at. He's shown and led by example on the issue. And so now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, he's a realist. You're never going to pass a ban on abortion at the federal level. You're not. Right. And so it's smart to go, yes, it is not. It's not a federal issue. It is a state issue. Really, really smart. Take the issue out of the congressional races, the Senate races, and the presidential race, and then blame them for being so radical. It was the smartest political move he could make.
It was insufficient for me, but I think you're right.
I may disagree with the policy. Mm-hmm. I might want more, but I have to be a realist as well. In the politics of this issue, Donald Trump did it really, really well. And by the way, every other candidate should look at what Donald Trump said.
Amen.
And they should replicate it. Now, if you're running for governor, I'm sorry, you're going to have to fight on this issue. State assembly or the Senate, you're going to have to talk about this because it's a state issue. That's squarely in your lap and an issue that you're going to run on in this next campaign. But Donald Trump, U.S. Senate, in U.S. House, it's a state issue. Send it away and take it away from Democrats. And by the way, if they do attack you, fight back. Don't stand there and let them punch you in the face, because mm-hmm. you're going to lose. You got to fight them.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think most, as we saw with this polling, most Americans don't want to have abortion at the point of birth or killing babies after they're born. They don't want that. And that's where Democrats are. So you have ground to fight on. Don't run away.
And I think as a pro-lifer, and it's hard because, like I said, Sean and I feel strongly in another direction. You know, we're definitely part of that 13% that wants it banned. I don't believe that the majority. I believe the rights of those babies are rights from God. And so I hate that anyone, whether it's a state or the federal government, can impose a law that would limit the rights of a child that has a right from God to live. So I definitely feel that way. But on the other hand, I am a realist. And I have to say, two things. One, more babies will be safe because of Donald Trump being in office than if Joe Biden is able to win. This is a fact. He's worse than Obama. And it's shameful because he's a Catholic, supposedly a Catholic. This is the most radically pro-abortion administration in the history of this country. And that is saying something coming after Joe Biden. But here's the second part I want to say, Sean. The second part is not just that the politicians at the state level, the governors, the assemblymen and women and the state senators will have to fight on this. But we pro-lifers have to get better at making the case for life. And, you know, a lot of money has gone towards, many of these pro-life organizations. And, you know, they're feeling the heat now because this is no longer this is a cultural battle that needs to be fought. This is a battle for the soul of our country. And whoever makes the case for the humanity of an unborn child makes the case that they should legally be allowed to be part of the human family, which clearly they should be. And I think that part of it is, Sean, and I've been out there in the battle, to make the case for life is also to make the case for motherhood. We're living in a world that tells mothers that they are birthing persons, that wants to erase women, that wants to erase the notion of gender, that wants to, we now have, we're living in an AI tech world that wants to replace the whole human gestation period. We're now less than 5 years away from, we did a whole episode on this, which we encourage people to go back to. We are 5 years away from artificial wombs where children will be grown in pods instead of in human wombs. This is the moment to make the case for life, for motherhood, for the importance for that spiritual bond between the mother and the child, that the abortion movement, that the secularists, that the progressives, and that the tech people who think they're gods want to remove. That primal bond between the mother and child is what is severed in abortion. But they are finding all kinds of different ways to sever that bond by not letting me be called a mother, by creating artificial wombs, and by creating, by basically diminishing my purpose in life, which I know my purpose in life is to give life, to work with you and God to give life. And so this is a very existential, very spiritual, very philosophical argument. And it's not just going to be one on scientific levels or emotional levels. It's deep. And this is a very tough cause for this is a tough road for the pro-life community to have to take. But they have to start to figure this out. Donald Trump has done his part. He took it back to the states. And by the way, though, he's mad at those pro-lifers, Sean, because they're turning on him. And he's saying, wait a minute, when you helped me get elected, you told me you wanted Roe versus Wade to be overturned. You told America that for the last 50 years. And I did it. And here we
are. You're going to come at me?
And now you're going to get mad at me. No. I did what you wanted. Now it's time for us pro-lifers to make the case for life, and it is a very dynamic case. It is not going to be one.
So to that point, Rachel,
emotionally, it's going to be one on a lot of levels.
But it's not Donald Trump's fault that
13% of Americans.
13% of Americans. So 13% of Americans are pro-life at all costs. That's not Donald Trump's fault that number's so low, and it's not his fault that 34% believe that there should be abortion at any stage of a baby's life. That's not his fault. That's the life movement's fault for not making the case.
It's our culture's
fault. For not winning the argument, right? Yeah. And so Donald Trump is responding in with these numbers, even putting pro-life justices that overturned Roe v. Wade. He's responded, giving opportunity to the life movement, to the culture makers to support life. And so good on him. But change these numbers, change the culture. And we can change the laws on this issue.
So. And the pro-life movement, Sean, made a good bet. Good on you. And I'm not trying to diss the pro-life movement. I know many of the people who are running these movements. These are the kindest. These are the champions of the greatest human rights issue of our time. I am not knocking the pro-life movement. They are up against a demonic force, frankly. They are up against demonic forces. But they made a good call. They took a chance on a New York businessman who used to be a Democrat, who was, had a lot of hyperbole and a lot of bluster and was rough spoken, and they took a chance on him and he delivered for them. So they put all their eggs into the legal part. But the hard part is the cultural part. They put the hard work into the legal and the political part. And they won that. They won. You won with Donald Trump. But now you have to do the very difficult work of the culture work. And that is spiritual. That is cultural. That is philosophical. And it is deep, deep stuff. And by the way, you're up against demonic forces. No question about it. But that's the work in front of us. And that is, as you so aptly said, Sean, that is the opportunity that Donald Trump opened up for us to now be able to make the cultural case, because the legal and political case we've already won.
So let's not fight Donald Trump. Let's fight the
demons.
Thank
you. Let's fight the demons. Let's fight the people who are promoting abortion, which is a really, really grave human rights offense to the world.
Happy anniversary to you.
Thank you, Sean.
I appreciate on my anniversary. They sit down and have a lovely chat with a fire. This is not the podcast. This is us having coffee in the morning.
She
throws
this is how it
fire.
Goes.
It's a little
this
Latin.
This is how it goes. This is like
Latin
my.
Fire, I call
this
it.
Is. Can I tell you, Sean, before we go? This is my passion issue.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of time. I've had 50 years to think about why this is my passion issue. Can I tell you why it is?
I think I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Tell me what you think I'm going to say.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I think this issue is there'll be a time that we'll be called to question on how we lived our life and did we defend the most defenseless among us. And when I sit before St. Peter, or you do I want to say I did nothing or that I fought to make sure these innocent lives were sacrificed? Or I want to go, no, I did all I could. I fought as hard as I could to make sure I saved as many babies as possible, because this is the Democrats can sanitize this as much as they want. This is the furthest thing from anything that should be sanitized. It's demonic. It's brutal. It's gruesome. It's hateful, and it's attacking innocence. It's killing innocence, and I think out of all the things that happen in culture, this one is the most important one that I think the question will be asked. What did you do?
You know, that's not what I was going to say, but it's beautiful what you just said. And it reminded me of what Henry Hyde said. Henry Hyde said that when all of us die, and those of us in the pro-life movement, he believes that when we make it to heaven, we're so lucky that we will be greeted by a heavenly chorus of little angels. And those angels will say, thank you to all of us for having defended them here on earth. And I believe that's true. So, yes, I agree with you. We will all be called to stand before God and asked, what did we do for the least among us? And there's no one more vulnerable, more voiceless, more defenseless than the unborn who are being ripped apart by the womb. And it's in the womb and it's brutal and it's gruesome. And those are butcher shops. But the reason why I care about this issue so much, Sean, is that the history of the world turned on one woman, an unwed mother, the Virgin Mary, saying yes to life. And I believe that that moment, that yes by the Virgin Mary, is the message for all of us. It's our call to help other women say yes to life too. The whole history of the world turned on Mary saying yes to the birth of Christ. And
I wouldn't have got that one.
Well, it's true, isn't
it's true?
True?
No, it's true. Yeah,
it's a true statement.
100%.
And so that's my call. And thank you so much for joining us today. It's a very interesting conversation. And if you're pro-life, don't fight Donald Trump, fight the Democrats.
And the demons.
And the
all right.
Demons.
Listen, thank you all for joining us on this special edition of The Kitchen Table. It's our anniversary. Thanks for spending it with us. If you like our podcast, you can rate, review, subscribe. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can always find us at foxnewspodcast.com. Subscribe, get a notice. We drop every Wednesday, Thursday, and Q&A on Friday. And until next time, have a great day.
Bye, everybody.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.